Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of We Got This podcast. I've got a question for you. What's the main reason for people leaving their jobs? Have a think. I'll wait. No, it's not the lack of ping pong tables, free coffee, and beer fridge Fridays. Although the last one would probably make a lot of offices more bearable. It's not money either. That's second on the list. A McKinsey survey found that 41% of participants picked lack of career development and growth as their top reason. Probably because my boss is a peach wasn't on the answer list. But jokes aside, once their basic needs are met, people want growth. They want development. They want to feel that they invest their 40 plus hours every week into something that's got meaning. This trend will only continue as younger generations will make up larger and larger proportions of the workforce. So if you're a business owner or a C-level exec, what do? You give people what they want by doing it in such a way that also benefits the business and aligns with where the company wants to go. I've recently met Mick Griffin, the Chief Growth Officer at Trafit, a recruitment applicant tracking system, who told me about their development path for their employees. They sounded brilliant, so I had no other choice but, as you can imagine, get Mick onto the podcast. But there is an important twist in all of this, but more on that later. Fun fact, without realizing, Mick and I were part of a citizen exchange program. He came to Poland around the same time I went to the UK. However, I think Poland got the better end of the deal, especially now that we are both here. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. Mick, welcome.
Like, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, I'm happy that Poland came out trumps in the end and got both of us. But no, really, really happy to be here. And I think it's going to be a really great talk. So thanks so much for considering me.
Thank you very much for joining. We are not far apart geographically from one another, but we've had an opportunity to chat before about, as I said, the development pathways, which I'm really keen on in learning more, because I know that a lot of organizations do find it difficult, and that's more and more what people want. As I said in the intro, especially once their basic needs in terms of especially finances are met. But first things first, we need to tick the most important question off the list. When Mick was little, who did he want to be when he grew up?
Okay, so I've got kind of a very raw answer, because I had to think about this one. I've got kind of two answers. I'm going to cheat a little bit. So the first one, which is going to sound really strange, is I really wanted, even saying it out loud makes me feel crazy, but I wanted to be a long distance driver of either a bus or like some kind of lorry or something. And I'm talking about when I was probably like 8 to 10 years old. And I just used to see these people, they would be like driving, they would have their little sleeping space, and I was just obsessed with this topic for a little bit. Like, I was like, wow, they get to drive, they get to see the world. Of course, as I grew up, I started to see the pros and cons of such a job. But weirdly, that's the one that of all the crazy things that come up of being astronauts and firemen and stuff, long distance lorry driver was the one that I always remember. So that was one. The second one, like I said, is a little bit of a cheater, because I wanted to be a professional rugby player. I was playing rugby since the age of 6, but I'm cheating because I actually managed to make that happen for 4 years of my life. So I kind of got there. So it's an easy answer because of hindsight. But yes, I actually was. My career started in the UK at 16 as a professional rugby player for 4 years.
Who did
a
you
long
play for?
Time ago now. So I played rugby league for a team called Salford Reds in the Super League. And I was in there, don't get me wrong, I was in their academy reserve grade system. I didn't break through. I didn't get to kind of like first team status, but I got to live that life for a few years that we all kind of, you know, if you played sport when you're younger, you got to dream about being a professional. And I got to experience it for a little bit. So yeah. But I'm still going to say that lorry driver was first. I am. It definitely took it first.
Have you ever played any of the simulators?
I haven't. I mean, I don't mean I love, I am actually still, I just passed 40 and I still love a good road trip. I love it. I'm a driver. I like to do it. But to be honest now, looking at the size and the responsibility of the larger things, I lost my thrill of like how it would be to drive like an 18-wheeler or something like that. So
in a way, I know what you mean. There is something about it. I think I was a teenager. So the first truck simulators came out that you could play, the games that you could play. And it was one that if I remember right, it was called 18 Wheels of Steel or something like that. And sure. You know what? It was brilliant. It was everything that you've described. It's like you were just, this was across the US that you were driving around. And it's just actually a lot of fun. I don't recommend playing it now, that particular game, because, you know, the graphics sure. will just destroy your eyes. But back then, we're talking 20 years ago, it was brilliant fun. And I remember just sitting in front of my laptop and genuinely something. There is something about, but there's a lot of people do love a good simulator, you know, the flight simulator being the prime example, that there is something yeah. to it if you're into it. And I guess there's a kind of relaxation mode into it, because you have to be focused, but it's not something that kind of numbs you in a way. It kind of gives the opportunity to, so yeah, I get that. And I do love a good road trip, so I'm with you on that.
And I think if we were going on like long range like bus trips, for example, with sports teams or with family. So, of course, I think my preconception was, well, hey, listen, this guy driving the bus is basically having a holiday for free. Now I'm older and I realize it's not exactly so luxurious. But still, I don't know, something sticks in my mind about this. And I actually met a friend a few years ago who that was actually his job. He used to drive lorries of fruits from Spain to Ireland. And he painted a different picture of this career path a little bit. So still sticks with me in my brain. But yeah, that was the one that was always there when I was younger.
Talking of painting a different picture, it reminded me of Top Gear doing the lorry drivers episode. I'm not going to get into it, but if you want to have a laugh, yeah, you know, can find it somewhere. I don't remember which season it is, but if you Google Top Gear, your drivers, you'll definitely find that. Okay, let's get onto the pathways, if we may. I already know the pathways you've just explained to me, but if you could share a bit more about them, what kind of the setup was, what it looked like, what was the aim of them when you introduced them, the listeners, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll try to put it in some kind of like elevator pitch mode, because you'll find that I could talk about this forever. But yeah, like, so what I mean by this is I got very lucky in my career now that I'm at Trafford, because I got to look, and I'm at Trafford right now. I think I have 16 direct reports to me through marketing, customer success, sales, etc. And I got to look at things in a way that basically, what are the things that I hated being an employee? You know, I mean, what did I dislike from my previous roles working, you know, over 20-year period? And basically, it's really interesting, the statistic you brought up at the beginning, which was that, you know, one of the most popular, at least in that survey and in many surveys, it's in the top two of this lack of development. But fundamentally, I believe that systems are broke when you have to be confident enough to ask for a pay rise, to ask for your self-worth. I think confidence is a great skill set to have, but it shouldn't be a requirement for people to develop their career path. So, long story short, what triggered this was I kind of joined Trafford, and just like in 90% of the businesses I know, I joined and I inherited a team. And basically in that team, there was four team members, all had exactly the same expectations. All had the same requirements from the business, all had the same job title, and we had four different salaries. And I was like, okay, I get this, it happens. And one of the really good team members kind of, I remember a couple of months later, like, said, "Mate, can I have a meeting?" I could see that he was super nervous. And he was like, "I've not asked for a pay rise for 2.5 years, and I think I'm deserving one." And I said, of course. And then I realized that, you know, basically, I think that this is a system and a structure that's been put in place to benefit companies, not employees, that employees have to request, they have to explain. So we'll probably go back and forth between like the problems it was supposed to solve. But let me explain basically what Pathways was. What we did at Trafford, first of all, is we standardized all of our salaries. So and this is not actually that unique, as I understand it. There's a lot of companies that have levels, especially in corporations. But fundamentally, we said, okay, for every career path we have in Trafford, we've created a 24-level salary. So there's level one and there's level 24. Level one being probably like apprentice intern level rate, 24 being some kind of director, head of, leader in the company. And we publish those internally and externally. So we're like, okay, here's all of our careers that we have. Here's the salaries. And then what we wanted to do is we wanted to make sure that it took us a long time, probably 3-4 months, and we had to fit every existing employee into that path. So there were some employees where we kind of came to them and said, hey, listen, right, your salary is this. We think you are level 12. That actually is going to mean for you a bump of 700 zlotys a month. Congratulations. We think that that's where you should be. There were some rare cases, and maybe not rare, there was cases in that scenario as well where we said to people, hey, listen, we think you're level 13, but your salary is equivalent to 15. So we're not going to lower your salary, but your next two promotions will not equal a financial increase. You need to catch up with your salary. But a phenomenal experience. I mean, like difficult, challenging, but then what we did is we told everybody what everybody else's salary was. Like, okay, now we've evened it all out. Now we've announced it to everyone individually. Now you get to see. Which that is normally the point when I'm telling this story where most people go, I can't do that in my company. But we'll see. We'll see how the way goes. So that was like the step one, was to get rid of all that salary discrepancy between people who were doing the same role with the same expectations, and to even all of that out. Then what we wanted to do was to say, okay, well, listen, you're on level 12. I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do to get from level 12 to level 16. So basically what we said to people is, we will show you how to get your next three to four promotions. And we wrote it down. And we came up with literally some kind of checklist for every single person. And we promised everybody 4 levels ahead, because we really couldn't say to someone on level 10 what you needed to be a director down the line. But we committed to giving 4 pathways ahead. And then the big part of this, 100% is probably the power of it, was we said to people, okay, when you tick all your boxes, you have a promotion. There was no chance for me as a leader of any leader to override that pathway. So basically, I can be really unhappy with an employee emotionally or through soft skills or through effort. And that employee can come to me and say, Mick, okay, I just reached my next level, and I will have to say, okay, tick the boxes, you get your promotion. And I think I probably had over the time maybe one scenario where somebody was probably going through pathways a little bit faster than they expected, or they were on it. But for the majority of the time, it worked really well. And the whole idea of this was that from a selfish perspective, me as a manager, I don't have to come to work on a Monday morning thinking to myself, are the 15 people reporting to me happy, motivated, earning what they should earn, knowing what they're doing? Because how many of us out right now have an employee in our team who's currently frustrated that they don't earn what they think they should earn, but they haven't had the courage or the situation or the time to say, excuse me, I need to talk about salary. So by default, that person is on a lower motivational scale, lower output scale, most likely. And that's actually ironically costing the company in the end. So that was one element. And the second element was, I got to say to my team, if you want to move quickly through your career path, now you know what to do. If you want to move through the levels at hyperspeed and you want to push and grind through it, great. On the flip side, if you're at a stage in your life where basically, like, this is where I really like where this went, was because no 2 years are usually the same in anyone's career. There are years when you have a baby. There are years when you move house. There are years when you change country. And it's really natural that during those years, it's years when you don't progress your career the same way. So I would say to my team members that, yes, you may jump one level this year and then 3 levels next year, depending on what is going on in your entire, you know, scenario. But very much trying to put 90% of it in their hands. So I could say, now go get it as quickly as you can.
But that's the thing I'm interested in. How did they move? How did they jump? What did they need to do? Is it task-based? Is it job responsibility-based? Is it upskilling-based? How do they move across? Move up?
Yeah, I mean, that was the most challenging part from a managerial side to create. So I think in the first initiation of development pathways, what we had is we had three different sections, basically. And one was KPIs. One was skill increases. And then the third one was actually we had a lot that was also knowledge sharing and kind of growth. I think what we basically said was like, right, I'll give you a prime example of someone that was in my team. So they would have a KPI goal of board 30 new customers as a salesperson. And so that would be, say, target one would be 30 customers. Now, again, that wouldn't be 30 customers per month. It would be a total. If it took them 3 months, 6 months, that was it. A second one would be then as a backup would be, let's say, for example, amount of revenue. So I would say, okay, let's say that, and bring 15,000 zlotys in revenue. Now that protected me as a manager because maybe they went and got 30 deals that were really tiny and they sneaked through. So I said, okay, well, I've got to make sure we have the two sides of that, which was great. Then we would have skill sets. Now, this was one of the most challenging areas, which was what I would do is I would look at their role, their career at that time, and I would go and pick out educational things that they needed to do. So, for example, a great one we used to have for everybody was they had to complete an online course given by a company called DevSkiller about recruitment in IT. So it was like a generic one that we could give. That was our industry. And they had to literally pop up and say, here's my certificate that I passed. And I had team members that didn't pass. And ironically, what was good for me was this DevSkiller company, they had a rule that if you failed three times, you had to wait 60 days to attempt it again. And I even had my team members that would come to me and say, hey, listen, can you talk to DevSkiller? Because I pressed send by mistake and I lost my chance and kind of things like that. So, and then thirdly, we had knowledge sharing, which was, for example, one of the things I asked the team member to do was run one internal workshop for other employees in the company to try to get them to. So one was take knowledge in. Second one was give knowledge away. And we would also have some in like on certain levels, we would have like HR. So we would be, for example, like become a mentor if you were level 12, you had to mentor a level 8. If you were level 15, you had to mentor a level 12. So it was varied, but basically that was how it worked. It's a little bit of a combination of all of them. Easier for some job titles, more difficult for others.
What was people's reaction to that when you started to do it? Was there any type of resistance? Did they welcome it? And then, you know, after a number of months, after a number of bumps upwards, were they kind of again engaged in it? Did they suffer challenges where they were getting frustrated because they couldn't go up the next level because they were missing the 60 days bit, as you said, with the upskilling? So what was the kind of the reaction overall from the team?
So one of the other mini benefits I want, now you've triggered my memory when we talked about why did we do this, was I also had this element of the fact that could I build a utopia? I'm being very, I've got air quotes for people who are just listening to the audio, basically, which was if a teammate of mine or an employee got a pay rise and got a promotion and it was announced, is there a way that I could make everybody feel happy about that process and not have that guilt and, oh, they got a pay rise because they go for beers with the boss on a Friday, they, you know, that kind of thing. Could I take away all of that water cooler gossip? So one of the things that I thought that was helpful here was that whenever anyone got a pay rise, we announced it instantly, company-wide. Like Mirik just went to level 12, congratulations. Kasia just went to level 14, congratulations. And every team member knew that if they wanted to go and see why that person got a pay rise, they can go and look at their pathway. Well, let me see. The other nice thing about this is we call this crowdsourced equality, because if two people were on level 12 doing the same job, their pathways had to be the same. I couldn't be like to person A, like, I like you, I feel like you're putting the effort in, and person B, sorry. Everybody was on an equal playing path and everybody could see everyone else's pathway. So coming back to your original question, the uptake was very positive. People were very happy. And what was very important, and we did a workshop on this, when we launched this, was delivery was key, in my opinion. So what we didn't do, we didn't just drop this on a general message to everybody. Over 2 days, we met every single employee one-to-one. Me, the manager, the CEO, and the employee. Because what we also said to employees was, we're going to give you the opportunity to challenge the pathway. Right now, in this pathway you've got that you have to achieve this, do you agree? And if they didn't agree, well, we said, okay, let's talk about it. And they got, we had a rule that basically we couldn't finish those meetings, or we couldn't move someone onto a pathway until we signed off on it together from both sides. So that was okay. We got some feedback from people said, I think this is unrealistic. And I said, okay, well, what needs to happen is then there are three people in the same position in that company. If you all agree, I'll move it for all of you. Like, there was no scenario that I could make an exception for one customer success specialist, and everyone had to be equal. So we had to agree. That was good. So after that process, everyone was very positive. But it's still the interesting thing for us as leadership was how surprising it was that in the first 3 months, we had to remind people, like, hey, have you done your pathway? Like, have you ticked your boxes? Oh, I'll get to it next week. And I thought that, you know, there would be this clamoring, but it all changed when we started to announce the first couple of pathways, levels up. You know, congratulations, Mirit got it. And then you could see other people going like, oh, so it works. It's actually happening.
It's not just, people saw it as this is legit. This is not.
Yes. Wow, okay. Exactly. And so, you know, so that way we instantly, I think then, like I said, we started to get things like people going through 3-4 levels in a single year. And we started talking about records between two levels. Oh my God, somebody just broke the record of two levels up in 69 days kind of thing. And that started to change a lot for everybody. I think that, you know, that worked initially very, very well, I would say. Talking about it from, I'm sure, you know, every employee would have a slightly different approach to it, but from overall, I think it was a very positive start.
Yeah. But you also have the unique position to see this as an overall impact from a point of view of where your job is obviously positioned as within the organization. Then you know how it's impacting people. Yes, granted, everybody might have a different viewpoint on that. But then you're also in the position to see how has this impacted the organization as a whole. And yes, you've mentioned that it solved a lot of challenges for the organization, solved a lot of challenges for you as a manager. You've talked about KPIs and certain elements of people's jobs and how that links to the pathways linked to the business performance. But from an overall point of view, having the pathways been reflecting how the business operates, one, but also performs from a kind of, you know, a revenue point of view even?
Yeah. So yeah, and this will obviously tell the story from probably as we're going to progress through this. So basically, I would say that the first 6 months were like amazing, basically, but for various different reasons. So first of all, because we spent 4 months building it was great to get it out there. We put it out there. The employees seemed to be taking it on board. We were tweaking it, etc., and it was going well. Employees were starting to level up, which for me ultimately is the goal, and the business was growing. We were having increased number of sales, revenue was going well, but then there was the huge secondary benefit that was certainly part of the plan, which was, of course, what we did is we announced this program externally. So we PR'd this thing that we had built and we turned it into a package and people could come and learn about it, share about it. And obviously, I think especially in Poland at the time, this just made huge waves, basically, where people were like, wow, that's like unbelievable that you're not only sharing salaries, you're sharing them externally, you are giving people pathways, how does it work? Oh my God. So we suddenly got this huge bump in both interest and then thereby by default, by the way, what does Trafford do? You know, so that there was
free PR on the back of it.
It's fundamentally exactly. Yes. Like free PR, basically. So there was this kind of ripple effect of the wave of various different things coming from this project that were generating positivity, generating energy, generating awareness. So it really put us on the map with a lot of people as well at that point. So all those things were, you know, high fives around the office. This is working. We did it. Like, and like, you know, everything was going well. And we were just tweaking it here and there, but it was positive.
That's good. That's good. And I guess this is this point in of the story where we come to the but,
yeah.
Because this often is a but. The pathways, they sound great, and they were aligned to what you did. You got some amazing free PR on the back of it. But as often is the case in business, there are ways we run and operate our businesses, the kind of the pathways, the processes, the structures that we've got, and the approaches to how we manage and run the organization that are for certain times. And despite obviously, you know, having some rough patches, especially around COVID in the last few years, we can say the last 5, 6, 7 years have been relatively boom years, or at least peaceful.
Yeah.
Years.
Yep.
Now we're in a different place. Now you are in a different place, and that caused you to reconsider the pathway.
Yes. Yes. So absolutely. So I can. So yeah. The spoiler alert here is that yes, we went through a lot of ups and downs with this program, and I can say that even in the early days, one of the first challenges was we had this concept of unifying this project. We started to have challenges even unifying this approach between departments. So what I mean is that, you know, I was obviously, because this idea was kind of my brainchild from the early days. So I was obviously very pro the concept overall. So one of the first challenges was that we really struggled implementing this in IT, in our IT departments, in the project departments, in the product departments, because I was in a fortunate scenario that the pathways worked for me because a majority of my teams worked on KPIs, marketing number of leads, sales number of sales, customer success, NPS, those kind of things. And then you suddenly get to IT where someone's a coder and they're like, well, what's my KPI going to be? And my head of IT at the time, the CTO, would be like, I'm not going to make a KPI which is like lines of code created and stuff like that. It makes no sense. So they originally had to hack my idea to make it company-wide, because the whole idea was still equality. We can't have IT not having this and this and this, etc. So that started to become, that was one of the mistakes or the challenges that we held on to for too long, where I bet that if we counted the hours as senior managers that we debated and brainstormed how to make pathways work, it got into the hundreds of hours, physical hundreds of hours going, well, I think pathways should be structured like this, and someone else. And this is obviously also the pain of building something that doesn't exist. So there's no benchmark. There's no right or wrong. So one of the first cracks we had was that we couldn't get it to physically work constantly in all departments the same way. Then eventually we let go of that scenario. We said, okay, so be it. I understand that we can, if you can still keep the essence of what we're trying to do, you can run it a different way. And then IT went to a different way of saying, like, where I would have number of sales or a KPI, they would have that this person would be, their skill sets would dramatically increase in certain types of coding. But the first crack was that definition would be defined by the CTO. That the CTO would have to say, yes, you are now mid-level expert in that code, which was for me, like the thing that I wanted to get away from was opinionated performance reviews. So that was the first step, but that was a challenge for us in a big way. And we kind of, it started to unravel a little bit from a top perspective of how that was working. And then, like you said, probably then what really started to happen, which was the challenge, was we started to see that when the economy changed, or when we started to hear the harder time in the market, where it was harder for the business to grow, the level ups kept the same pace. And we were suddenly sat there with me, myself and the CEO, Adrian, was like, something is wrong, because all these great people are coming and saying, look, I learned this skill, I did this, I ran my workshop, and the growth of the business was not following the same trajectory, which was almost like compounded challenge because we agreed to all the pay rises. So we were increasing our costs while the revenue is not increasing. So that became the very, that showed us instantly that it's not, what I want to say here, which is super interesting, which is, it's not that I don't believe it's that the foundation and the structure was wrong. It instantly showed us how much we have to constantly evolve the things that are in people's pathways to reflect what we are trying to achieve as a business. And then looking back in hindsight, it was like we almost totally forgot that we spent 4 months building pathways when we launched it. And when it's rolling, you don't have a pause button. And I'm suddenly like, wait, if I have 15 pathways out of whack in my direct reports, where am I going to find the time to fix them all? And then when am I going to find the time to evaluate if my fixes were the right fixes? And can I do that without breaking people's morale in the idea of I have transparency, I know the goals in front of me, etc.? And that's when it started to become super, super challenging. And we definitely had problems like in that phase.
So where are they? Where are the pathways now? Are they still going? Have you paused them? Or
so literally, as we are recording this podcast, we literally had to pause them 2 weeks ago. Now the irony here is, so I can actually say what happened was we technically paused them all probably around 14, 15 months ago. But with the promise to the team that we are now working on V2. We are working on version 2. We're going to fix them all. But in the meantime, we have to stop them because they are messy. And the team kind of said, okay, we understand. We will wait for the new ones. And that was in the height of when the company growth was as most challenging as it's ever been to kind of deliver, to find the results. The market was very unpredictable. So we paused them then. We probably spent a month or two coming up with a new vision for them, which we actually created, which was what we did is we hyper-aligned it with the company growth. So what we did, like I said before, originally it was like, you hit your individual KPIs, you grow no matter what. What we had to do is, like I talked about those sections before, we had a new section, which was company results, which was company has to hit this level. Company has to hit this level. And what we did is we also converted it to a point system instead of a checkbox system. So what we meant by that was if you dramatically overachieve on personal results, you could earn enough points that you would still progress even if the company didn't hit their goals. And vice versa, if the company's doing well, it might even assist you a little bit in personal goals. So what we wanted to, I still had this in my heart at the bottom, which was I don't want to make it that you can only progress if the company progresses. And this comes from, you know, we've probably all got those friends. Some of you will have experienced this yourself. And I categorically struggle with companies who say like, oh, we have a freeze on all promotions because the company didn't hit its shareholder targets. I hate this. I fundamentally hate it. I also hate, oh, I'm afraid the company policy is that you can only be promoted once a year. And it's so popular. And so honestly, when I was looking at building this and trying to hack it into the way that it would still work and it would still be well built for the business, I knew we were going grades and grades away from the original vision. We were getting a little bit further away. What we ended up doing is we relaunched the better version in one team of mine. We relaunched it with the points, with the system. It functioned better. But I was still not finding the right amount of capacity as a manager to maintain it. So eventually what we came to the conclusion was after running it as a better version for 3 months, we also, this is a very important add-on here, is we officially paused it in the company 2 weeks ago, but we paused it indefinitely because there was a very big negative of pausing it. And I didn't personally realize this, that when you implement a program like this, that this is how you get your promotions, this is where you go, employees took for granted then that meant that this was the only way. So that if they truly believed that they deserve a pay rise, but they didn't tick all the boxes, they wouldn't come and ask me. They wouldn't talk to me anyway. So when we paused them, a lot of employees were not thinking, they didn't come and ask. In the gap moment, they didn't come and say, Mick, I know we don't have pathways, but by the way, I think I should have this, that, and the other. So we realized like, oh, right, we have a problem here. We have to tell everybody that while this is not functioning, this is how you work. This is how we talk about pay rises and promotions, because it's never off the table. It should never be off the table. There should never be some absolute rule that nobody gets pay rises until X, Y, or Z. So what we had to literally do maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago now, where I said to the team, okay, I said company-wide, I know a lot of you are wondering, pathways are now basically postponed because we know that we are, as managers, we do not have capacity to build them in the right way for you, for the company. They need more attention. We're not going to do it in time. And I don't like you being in the limbo. So the levels of salaries stay, the transparency stays, but here's the fundamental thing is, and again, I didn't want to go back to the ice age of, we're going to do it like all the old companies do. So the only thing I could do for my team, or the only things I could do in the short term to kind of alleviate some of the problems was I said, okay, well, instantly, we're going to put in my calendar as your manager, a meeting every month that is only about your career. So we're not going to sit and talk about what you've got on your task list. We'll have those meetings somewhere else. But I need to make sure that you know every month you've got an opportunity to sit down with me and tell me, I'm looking for this, this is happening, whatever. Because I still think that the worst thing about career pathways and developments is the silence. It's the unknown. Should I go and meet with Mick and talk to him about this? So the first thing we did was we scheduled those. And I said, during those meetings, I'll communicate with you verbally what I think you need to do to get to your next level. So still trying to create that level of understanding of what's next. It's just not written down. It's not as advanced as I would love it to be. So that's where we, and again, it was because the changes in the economy when things became harder to grow, it definitely showed the cracks and the weaknesses or even the optimism in the original plan. That was good, actually. It's good for a business that it's shown us where it was weak. But yeah, it definitely showed us that it's really challenging as a business to have a bunch of people progressing and then the business not progressing. And it's not a fault in the people. It's a fault in the fact that what the targets or the goals we had set them were not accurate enough to align with what the business wanted to do, basically.
So you got a indefinite pause on that, but you still have people, mm-hmm. giving people the ability to get pay rises in this particular case. How do you manage that process in the interim? Obviously, yes, you have these meetings, but not necessarily what are the criteria, but how do people know what to focus on? How do you connect that what they focus on in terms of their growth is connected to where the organization wants to be or wants mm-hmm. to go.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely taken the disappointing element for me is it's definitely come back to very much working with me directly. So what that means is that there's an element of us setting some short-term goals. There's an element of us talking about this, but then what's come back into the picture, which wasn't ever really written down, which was like, can you tell them, we're talking about the things that I want them to grow, how I want them to grow individually. So I will say, for example, like one of the very big things when people work for me directly is like, can you tell me the last thing that you tried to do that you haven't done before and did it work? Because I constantly really like, again, and this doesn't mean that it works. Now, one of the big things for me is like, I really want my people to be challenging the status quo. One of the things that everybody know, if the answer for me is like, if I say, why do we do it that way? Oh, because we always did it that way. It's the answer that never works with me. I love to see what changes, to try. So one of the things now that's creeped into development is me saying like, okay, how can I make you a better version of yourself while you're in the company? Like, and also one of the things that's brought back, which is a positive now, because one of the things to know about those development pathways is they could, for some people, feel very cold. It's very important. It was all on paper. So now I get to sit to people and say, hey, listen, like what, and this is the question that I love now is, what would you like me to be judging you on in 6 months? That's exactly the way that I kind of word that question. What do you want to be judged on? And we come back to that first thing that you talked about, because I love giving people responsibility I don't like giving people tasks. So I like to say to people like, hey, listen, if we had to get 30 more leads out of our right now, how would you do it? Do you think that you're in a position that you're ready to go try do it? And are you okay with me in 3 months asking you, did you get the 30 leads? And surprisingly, some people are like, yes. Some people are like, no, thank you. That's not me right now. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But I need to know that as a boss, because I need to then go, okay, well, do I need to come and start thinking where those 30 leads are coming from? Or can I give that out to the team? Can I give that to individuals and then reward them later with not only pay rises, job salary changes, but also with more responsibility? Okay, now can you maintain those 30? Can you go make them 40? Can you teach the other team how to do giving as much as I can?
I get, obviously, there are a lot of challenges developing these pathways, and especially finding the right balance between, you know, keeping people engaged, keeping people motivated, and in that state of flow, in a certain sense. So you in a way, what you've done, you've gone Duolingo on pathway development. You've gamified them brilliantly, as Duolingo does with language learning. But the question that I'm sitting with from a business perspective, what do you find? Pathways, your pathways, or pathways in general, mm-hmm. What do you, in your experience, find that is the biggest challenge, the biggest obstacle? What makes it difficult to connect development and growth of employees to business objectives and business mm-hmm. strategy, for example, in that kind of narrow chunk? Because there is a lot of challenge, because you've got two things that you're trying to marry two things. And I think that's probably the problem. You can't make two things into one, which is, I think, where a lot of organizations go wrong. At best, you have to try and run them parallel. But how do you do that? And why is it so challenging from your experience?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the, like, when we were building it, and even to this day, I have this thing that I've obviously, like, also, it depends on the scale of business. But when we first built them, I remember to this, like, we literally had, I think we had 33 employees in the company. And I was very big on the fact that basically, if you have one employee that's demotivated because of their career, because of their salary right now, because of how other people are being treated, your company is now, originally we used to say that we've lost 3% efficiency out of the door. Actually, we now believe that it's closer to 6-8%, because they have a residual effect on people around them and in their team. Because most of the time, dissatisfied employees, even if they will not explain this to their leader, they will be talking to people around them. And so for me, I was like, we can't afford for that to happen. I need a scenario that I can have 100% of my team happy, motivated, growing. Right. So that was the input. That was the idea behind it. And then you've got this, maybe where I think we were way too idealistic, but I still would love to believe in it, which is there a scenario that if you've got 100% of your employees growing, being better at what they do and delivering better results, that the company doesn't grow? In my head, on paper, logically, I think to myself, it's impossible that you have employees growing, doing what they're supposed to do as part of the strategy, and the company doesn't grow. Now, the first thing to note here is that I do think that that logic is right, but everything then becomes about quantity. And that was where we got out of line. Yes, you can have 30 people growing, all doing the right thing, but it doesn't mean that if they might grow faster than the company grows. And that was where, when you're in peacetime, a good economy growing, then the company is probably going to not be far behind. But in tough times, in shrinking economies, in high churn environments where you start to suddenly lose customers, then it's not your fault. And a lot of that is that word, their fault. That's where you suddenly become out of sync. And people can grow individually when a company is not growing, especially in micro timelines. So what I mean by that is, I think if you zoomed out and look at a 3-year period, it probably gets much closer, but you can have a 6-month period where a high percentage of your team come and get a pay rise when you're in a really specific 3-6 month period of pain as a business. So if you had, I would say, like, basically, what can I say? If you're a company with deep pockets, you can do this. It will work out. I'm staking claim on it. But if you're on 3 months, 6 months, 12 months runways of budget, that's why I was saying, like, what do I think? And maybe I'm jumping the gun here to a future question, which would be, could this be solved? I would like to hazard a guess that potentially one full-time employee responsible for the program might just be enough. That employee would have to be extremely, like, they would have to have a lot of openness and responsibility, and they would have to have a really good understanding of all positions to be able to look at a pipe and to come to a manager and say, listen, I think that this is out of sync, da-da-da. But yeah, exactly. That's the problem. It's the micro elements and the speed of growth that isn't synced. And maybe that's not syncable ever, because you might have employees moving faster than your company. And I don't think you can tweak the program to such an accuracy that it would be aligned.
That is a very good question, whether that can be synced. And as you were talking, I'm digesting that question. I'm pondering that question, because it's, again, if we look at it from a bull market, bear market, peacetime, tough times perspective, if we do that space, if it's a growing economy, a lot of things are easier. You will know this. IT has been milking it and riding the wave of good times for decades. Well, not decades, but a decade at least. And unfortunately, we're spending money like there was no tomorrow. But unfortunately, tomorrow came and there's a big reset. So what I think is going on in the IT industry is not a crisis, is not a shrinkage. It's an adjustment, because the bubble has burst, because it's been pumped up too much. Now there's a correction. The same as stock market, you will have a correction every time now and again. And that's, I think, what's happening here. But then again, if you've got a growth market, a lot of money, a lot of things are easier, but now we're not. We need to be a little more clever and precise and thoughtful and analytical about how we spend our money personally and in companies. And I think that's where the answer lies, as you said, the growth bit. That the pace is one thing, but what I think is equally important is the fact that the growth is in the same direction. Because a company can be growing slower, but still, and the employee faster, but still maintain the things. They're pointing to the same, they're using the same North Star as a business. But what often happens, I think, that is split. The company wants to go in a certain direction, actually needs to pivot with their business, but the company pathways, the employee pathways haven't been adjusted for that to potentially basically reskill people or change their KPIs. And I think that's where the problem is.
It definitely is, and that you've still got this thing that I'm talking about tech bubbles, where a lot of the time an employee growing and hitting a benchmark today, as a company, you feel that benefit over a time period. You know, it's like you put the money up today, you get the money back later, right? Everything is in a delay as well, which is also a challenge. So like I said, I think if you zoom out, you would see it working out, but you also have to have that ability to ride the waves. And the other thing as well, which is, it's almost like a vicious circle, because also you talk about, like, this is what happened to traffic, which was when the economy shrunk and we suddenly had to brainstorm, pivot, how are we going to get out of this? How are we going to fix it? How are we going to, the instant thing that goes down is my available time. So as a leader, I even have less time to look at the pathways. I have less time to think, how am I going to resolve this and et cetera. So one of the elements is like I said, maybe if there is an ability for an employee to be, or a number of employees, depending on the size of the company, to be focused on pathways regardless of what's going on. So they're not going to get pulled and distracted, et cetera. But this is,
so wouldn't the challenge there be that person will have to really possess the business knowledge of what's going on, because
and the wide skill set and be good with people.
It would have to be a certain level of within the organization to be able not just to be a monitor but also an enforcer of certain things. But it still does come back for me to the yardsticks being different, not further apart, but in a different place at the same level. All of a sudden, your KPI is not to get 30 leads or 30 sales call in industry X. It's actually to get 15 of them in industry-wide, because that's where we position as a company. And I think that's what I mean by saying that
absolutely
we'll maintain the growth in the same direction of the people and of the organization.
I mean, that's it. I mean, I think it's just it's all a number of constant, consistent micro pivots, micro tweaks, etc. Which one side of my brain says, well, hey, listen, they're going on anyway. Companies don't have pathways. They still have to pivot their teams. They still have to do, even if you do pivot, you've got to tell your salesperson to go here and then. So in a way, it's like, well, just go update the pathway and it's done. It's so funny though, that in real life world, it doesn't work like that. You just don't get to that next level. And you become, because you're becoming a firefighter. We say this like a lot, right? That you're going, putting out the next fire, the next fire, the next fire. So where we get to now, and I would like, you're hearing a lot of this now, like as an impartial person for the first time, which is now the thing that's in my head, is that even with all its faults, is it still better than the alternative, which is you've got to go and knock on your boss's door. He's got to be in a good mood. She's got to be, you've got to have just had something very successful happen. Because I dread the day that we will ever slip all the way back down to the old school approach of, my boss has to like me. The company has to be in such a good position. I don't want to get there. So I'm trying to fight for the middle ground. And now, obviously, luckily for us, the economy is back. So by default, I'm finding more capabilities, finding more challenge, make more time to do that. But the I still need to make sure that we don't slip back to the way it was, because I still think it's fundamentally broken. I do.
if you listen carefully, you make, and the listeners, you will hear me not disagreeing, because I don't. I'm with you on that. I think it gives a lot of people. I look back to my employee days, and one of the jobs I had, there was a clear break. It wasn't a pathway. It was a salary grade scale. I knew when my next grade was coming up. There were three levels within the grade. I didn't have to do much other than time passing to get that. To jump another grade, that was a different story, right? But I remembered I didn't have to worry about it. I knew it was coming up, right? It wasn't a guessing game.
Yep.
And that removes the gray area. It removes the uncertainty from the equation and gives people a lot of peace of mind. And I think that's really, really important. So any type of structure that offers that is...
It's a big step forward, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, because I still remember a story of an employee who came to me, and this happens every day around the world. They came, mate, I've got an offer on the table that's 12% higher than what you're doing, what I can get. And I said, hey, listen, buddy, like I can only, the level of the levels, the pathways are the pathways, but I'm only gonna give you one piece of advice. And I'm very lucky that I still fully both feel and remember what it's like to be an employee. I didn't forget it. I don't go business first. I still can be very human. I hope I can be. And I'm like, just go and ask your new employee, can they tell you what their next two salaries are going to be? That's it. The only question I recommend you ask, because what a lot of companies are good at doing is getting you across the border on a nice offer, and then you have no idea. So, and that particular employee in that time, of course, it's an easy story for me, because that person came back and said, you know what, I think I'm going to stay. And I'm pretty sure it's because the answer that they got wasn't the answer that they wanted. So I think transparency, openness. But I, as a manager, I feel it's phenomenally better for me. This is not an employee-only, employee-focused program. I'm happy that I do not have to think and deal with the back talks, the politics, the this, that, and the other. I love the transparency because it takes a weight off my shoulders. I genuinely do. I genuinely feel positive about the fact that I'm happy that everybody knows everybody's salary, including mine. There's no exceptions, because then people can hopefully make more decisions for themselves personally. If you want to go and get a mortgage or a credit for a house that is worth X, and you can see that by working in traffic, you're not going to have that salary for X amount of months or years. You get to make that educated conversation with your friend, with your family. I'm going to change the job because we have that goal. And I would be like, totally get you. I totally understand. But you also have that chance of saying, well, actually, that salary is two levels above me right now. I can go get this if I hustle. I can go get it in 6 months. And it's possible as well. So...
That's a very refreshing approach. Very refreshing to hear, but that does happen in organizations. The big question now is what next? Not necessarily with the pathways, because you kind of alluded that you're going to be working on that. But if you could, there are more details that you could share, that would be great. But in general, in the next few months, what are you looking forward to the most as a person in your personal life, but also in for Trafford as well?
No, I mean, in the personal life, I'm very, very happy that winter is over. This is always a big change for me. No, I mean, we've got some really exciting things coming up. But I mean, the team at Trafford know that this is not really much things coming up, but we do a lot anyway. We're kind of quite a fast tempo approach to things. So that's really good. What I'm really happy about, I'm happy, first of all, that event season is coming up in general, because I really like both sharing what we are doing. Like, that transparency for me doesn't finish at the door of Trafford. Like, I love telling you even today all the things that are working, not working. Why should someone not learn from my pain and I can save them, something like that. And to be honest, I'm actually super excited because I've got a podcast coming out that might just be out by the time this podcast drops. I think it won't even be a spoiler because, yes, it will be ready. So basically, I'm very lucky that I'm going to be co-hosting a podcast with Janina Bach, who is a very popular marketer and brand ambassador in Poland. And she's agreed to have a podcast that is very, it's lacking seriousness. So we are talking about things like marketing and sales and branding, but we are very casual and relaxed, and we are dropping probably far too many jokes in the content as we go along as well. And that is, if I can be bold enough, that if you're going to go look for what that crazy podcast is, the name is going to be The Alpaca in the Room. That is literally the name of the podcast. And that says everything you need to know about the podcast. So we were like, okay, the theme is like saying things that not everybody wants to say. So like the elephant in the room, but we can't use elephant. It's too normal. We'll use alpaca. And somehow now every episode is themed around alpacas. So that is coming up.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to be tuning into that one. That's for sure. When it drops, I'm curious whether you're going to actually get a physical alpaca in the room or go to an alpaca farm.
We are. I think we are just about to drop episode one next week as we are recording this, and we've agreed that episode 12 is going to be at an alpaca farm. And ironically, Anina, by somehow, shape, or form, has a really good friend who has a farm of alpacas, and we've agreed that we will do it. So. It's like I said, my approach to everything is like, can we do it differently? And if we do it differently, will it be something like people will take benefit from? And this is another great example of just doing something without any real long-term strategy goal. Just let's see where it falls. And also, you know, listen to me trying to make that, like, this is not purposely a nice full circle. But what I mean by this is, like, when we look back at Pathways now, I don't regret that we had to stop it. I'm really proud of us that we tried and that we also know where we failed. I would rather have got where we are today than not tried it at all. And I think that's something that I can leave everybody with, which is go have some fun with whatever you're doing 8 hours a day. It's too long a time to be serious.
Precisely. I can't help but think, I don't know whether it's a real quote, what the actual number is, but because the numbers vary, but I can't help but think and remember the saying, the quote about Thomas Edison, that he hasn't failed, he just found 1,000 ways of how not to make a light bulb.
Exactly.
Whether it's 1,000, whether it's 100, whether it's 10,000, doesn't really matter, but I think it still stands, right? So it's about doing something, changing, innovating, tweaking, starting afresh. It's not easy. It's hard in many times. It's bloody difficult, but it's about kind of persevering, finding new ways.
Exactly.
Mick, thank you very much for being, I can say, an exceptionally good, well-behaved guest that also did most of the talking for me, which is fantastic. And sometimes even ask himself questions, but most of all, talked a lot of sense and a lot of useful information. So for those who missed my voice, sorry, I'm sure we
can. I should say sorry.
We can do that another time, but it was rude to interrupt with a very nice flow that Mick had. So Mick, thank you very, very much for being an all-around great guest and a good egg.
And if I know that was a crazy story, if anyone's got any questions, you can always find me, ask me directly. There's still a lot of gaps probably in those stories.
What's the best way to find you? Is it LinkedIn?
LinkedIn is definitely my place. It's where I hang out. So yeah, please grab me on LinkedIn. I'm unanimous for knowing that I've never rejected a request, a connection request. I've probably blocked a few people after I've accepted the request, but please drop me a line. Hopefully you heard the podcast and I'm sure that you're listening to other episodes. It's been a great to be a guest. And yes, as I always normally have to do, I have to apologize for talking too much.
Do not. We agreed that before we started recording that unless you got me pulling you back, you've got the right of way and you use that beautifully. So nothing to apologize for. Again, thank you very much for taking the time.
Perfect. Thanks again.